Now, Crooning Buffoons, a sermon about the evils of so-called rock and roll music and its pernicious effect on the youth of the nation. The preacher is Ray Gosling.
Several times I've been asked, once by a professor in a great coat and dark glasses, nice man, nice manners, and several times by young people, particularly from the public schools, doing research in the Teddy Boy department of television companies. That kind of person, with a lovely job, has said to me, what do you think of it all now? The never-ending rock and roll inspiration in life and fashion and style. Do a little Richard Hoggart on the last 25 years. Sum it up. Lay it out in order. Like bargains by post in the Sunday Telegraph. Different drawers for different screw sizes. From drainpipe trousers to safety pin through the nose. From blue suede shoes to harlequin hair. The winkle picker to the Doc Martin boot, skinhead to Mohican, and pollen up your hooter flower power stuff. Put it in a nutshell. Make some sense of the thousands of crooning buffoons and their tasteless noise. Yes.
There's a man walks the streets of London late at night. The
David Screaming Lord Such, one-time parliamentary candidate at Stratford-upon-Avon. Still alive, lots of them are.
Hanging down his back.
Over more than 25 years, this kind of Yahoo croonery has captured people with a frenzy. There's been nothing like it since the nonconformist reformation of the 17th century. And I don't understand why, but we British have been particularly susceptible. I know everybody tries to tell the story these days, and this is only my version, but I've been there since the very beginning, a pretty average working-class choir boy. Imagine that world, if you will. When Mr. Attlee had left the stage and rationing was being phased out, King George had just passed on and the Dome of Discovery at the Festival of Britain had been taken apart. It was a world of Meccano and Hornby, solid stuff, Bakelite and tin, but no plastic yet. Monday was washing day, Tuesday drying day, and Wednesday airing on a clothes horse before the coal fire day. Happy homes. Sheet music came from Tin Pan Alley, and pop songs went like this.
Going courtin', oh, with set your senses in a whirl. Going courtin', dude enough to go and see a girl. Oh, it's fun to hunt and shoot a gun, or to catch a rabbit on the run. But you'll find it's twice as sportin', going courtin'.
She went.
On just coconuts and fish fur on the sea. A rose in her hair, a gleam in her eyes, and love in her heart for me.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail.
Rhythm without the blues and nothing nasty in the musical woodshed.
I do hope that doggy's for sale.
My son, you're everything to me. My son, you're all I hoped you'd be.
They weren't crooning buffoons, that lot. They were trying to lift up our radio hearts with tunes you could hum while changing gear on your Sturmey Archer on the way to school. We scholarship boys laughed at such silly ditties. Bits of fluff to put a smile on the kisser of factory girls. Music while you worked, making aproned bosoms rise on Housewives' Choice. The days before rock. The disc jockeys we wrote to were chaps. Chaps like Godfrey Wynne on Radio Luxembourg. A perfect plumb in the mouth through the hiss and the crackle. And the tunes we hummed were Gilbert and Sullivan airs from the school production. And even after I'd dropped my handlebars, we'd hum and whistle solid stuff.
We're riding along on the crest of the wave and the sun is in the sky.
Though me toggle rarely burnished, I was not an unhappy little scout in those Rudge and Hercules bicycle days.
We'll do the hailing when other ships are out of sailing. We're riding along on the crest of a wave and the world is ahead.
The world ahead looked full of good things. Suez accepted, Britain was making progress. Hadn't we built a welfare state, the envy of the world? More than enough jobs then for everybody. Goods in the shops at last and the never-never to buy them with. It did seem that the Doris days could go on forever.
Are you sitting quite comfortably? Then I'll begin.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me.
Good evening. Every now and again, since the war, I've heard people say, isn't Britain only a second or third class power now? Isn't she on the way out? What nonsense. This is a great country, so don't let's be ashamed to say so.
When I grew up, fell in love, I asked my sweetheart, what lies ahead? Will we have rainbows day after day? Here's what my sweetheart said.
All I want is a little peace.
These days, I want to stand up in your tears and splash about in them and sing. I want to be there when you grovel. I want to be there. I want to watch it. I want the front seat. I want to be there when you, when your face is rubbed in the mud.
Now I have children of my own. They ask their mother, what will I be? Will I be handsome? Will I be rich? I tell them tenderly.
But if you carry this resolution and follow out all its implications and don't run away from it, you'll send the British Foreign Secretary, whoever he was, naked into the conference chamber. Naked into the conference chamber.
Que sera, sera.
Shafts of nastiness in Betty Windsor's golden woodshed, but they didn't touch me, and I don't think many of my generation were aware of the hurricane to come. For me, it was all dib, 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 and dob, 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 and I did do a good turn to somebody every day, and standing upright in the stalls for some Eucharist in Miss Surplice and Ruff while the incense wafted to the roof of the nave. Not that I was a soloist, but I did my part, St. Matthew's, Northampton.
I go every night, I make myself some tea, I rush into the bedroom, put on my old blue jeans, back down the stairs. I say goodbye to Mum. She looks at me and says, where you going? Go knocking at the two.
An instant, as a Billy Graham conversion, it was hassocks away, cassocks to the wind, and light your own incense cannon. I was greasing me ankles to slide on black drain pipes and pull up me luminous socks and down to the fair.
We're rocking at the two eyes, we won't be on tonight.
The point I'm making is that this dousing of the Doris days by Wee Willie Harris and all the other proto-buffoons had a devastating effect on people who ought to have known better, and I think it set a pattern for everything that happened since. The mods and the punks, a pattern that has soured people like me, the grammar school generation, the top of the milk from the udder of this man's cow.
I want to speak particularly tonight to young people who are 16, 17 or 18 years old. You're called by the law young persons. This sounds rather stiff and unfriendly. It's not too bad a phrase. It's a good thing to be young, young and vigorous. It's a good thing to be a person, to have a personality and character of your own. But you'll understand if, to save time, I refer to you simply as boys and girls.
Rab Butler, still alive, and it is his 1944 Education Act that set up the 11 plus system. What has this to do with rock and fashion and nastiness in the woodshed? Just that the grammar schools were heralded, as the great Mr. Butler intended, to be the chance for hard-working children of poor but earnest parents, enabling their offspring to leap into the future and lead this country into a decent scientific meritocracy, to follow the Hoggarts and Hattersleys. And the grammar school lot should have known better, and they didn't. Not enough backbone to prevent the forces of rock bending their spines. All but the prefects and dedicated swats were overcome by the force of rock, and like the children of Hamlin, the best of our generation began to look forward to glamour in the gutter. Instead of looking up to the skies of technology, it was Tartar Biggles, old chap. There was no Battle of Britain for us. It was Hello Art School in the end.
How's the most beautiful life in the whole world?
Hot, tired. I don't feel very much like anything.
In the 1950s, we all used to go to the cinema two or three times a week.
Beautifully pregnant.
Champagne?
Yep.
And ravioli.
It's not all.
Respectable mums and dads were staying at home, knob-twiddling, and you did have to, the television, leaving the flea-pit cinemas without natural discipline to be overrun by the young.
Well, champagne, that's for the mother.
You waltzed in, your little gang, and wolf-whistled through the love scenes, went bow-wow-wow at the cowboys. Whenever a wrong reel appeared, or upside down, or broke, well, there was uproar, catcalls and owl hoots. The management had aisle walkers with their ever-ready torchlights to shine on persistent troublemakers. Someone was always ejected for heavy petting or throwing missiles. And into this atmosphere of general horseplay came the film Blackboard Jungle. Not much of a story, really. Teachers being duffed up by pupils at an American high school. Very B-movie cliché stuff. We'd heard it before. What we hadn't heard was this. This was the moment that put the lid on the coffin of niceness forever.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around 10 o'clock tonight. Put your scratch bags on. Join me, hot. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till the broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight.
We went bananas, clapped and stomped at the screen, and the pit teds did handstands in the aisles. Blackboard Jungle was the first great chant of our time, like an electric shock. We all just stood up on our bucket seats and went ape at the screen and bayed back at the blood-beating bump of the music. Went ape and bananas, we hollered like animals. What you have to remember is, this is 1955, and on the football terraces then, there was no filth or hooligan chanting. It was ooh and ah and well done Stanley Matthews. Then Hollywood took that band, Bill Haley and the Comets, and made a film just about them and their rip-it-up music. And in local cinemas, there were riots and in the streets, and Mr. Macmillan's United Kingdom was flabbergasted.
Does the team approve of the action by the watch committee of certain cities in banning the film Rock Around the Clock to the disappointment of many young enthusiasts? Well, the whole team is looking at me. Admiral Shinwell, come on.
This is a social problem, a psychological problem, almost a pathological problem. It seems to me the whole world is rocking and rolling. You can get these people who want to, what do you call it, jive and dance their heads off and play all kinds of tricks. Well, you know, there's something happening to the youth of the nation.
One night I was happy at home sticking stamps of the British Empire into my album. I saw my future as assistant to Dan Dare out of the Eagle comic. I was a privileged grammar school boy with a copy of The New Elizabethan Age by Richard Dimbleby.
Mrs. Stocks.
Yes, I think the watch committees are quite right to ban a film if it encourages people, young people, to behave in this silly way. Now, if those boys had been born rich, they would have been at public schools and their brains would have been kept on the stretch most of the day, and when they weren't thinking, they would be made to take violent exercise. And they would go to bed, not exhausted, but comfortably tired.
I had a grammar school blazer, and I took it off. And the next moment, in the woods below the rugger field, I was drinking cider from the bottle, smoking turf cigarettes, and we were practising curling our lips, grammar school boys, parting one another's hair into a style called the duck's arse. Jeremy Thorpe didn't approve either.
This is a very serious historical question in 1374, it swept across Germany. There was dancing madness, accompanied by aberrations of the mind and distortions of the body. It said the population was much given over to dancing madness and fornication. Well, now, what worries me is that a fourth-rate film with fifth-rate music can pierce through the thin shell of civilization and send people into turn them into wild dervishes.
What we used to do was to go to the bus station and spit, hawk great lumps of phlegm across a bus queue, and pick your nails conspicuously with a steel comb filed down like a dagger. And the fit teds, whenever anybody looked back, they'd amble over and say, without a smile, we never smiled, we all looked like grim undertaker's men. The fit teds would amble over and say, what are you looking at, eh? Oh, thanks, Bill Haley. The Doris Days were dead. Roll over, Dennis Lotis, and tell Bob Boothby the news.
Jiving. What a thing to do. Can you see me jiving? I've never had the faintest temptation, I may say. It's not my idea of fun at all. And I think that one of the purposes of us old fogies in life is to stop young people from being silly.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're being exceedingly silly.
The fact is that the whole world is in a turmoil.
I am a lover of music, therefore I'm prejudiced and don't like jazz. Jazz to me comes from the jungle, and this is jungle music taken to its logical conclusion. This is musical Mau Mau.
They're disturbed in mind.
If they want to be teddy boys, well, I'd rather they went off to Cairo and started teddy boying around there. There might be something to be done with that. But in cinemas in this country, no.
Policemen's hats will be knocked off, people will be dancing in the streets, dustbins will be turned over.
Unexpended animal spirits.
Lampposts will be smashed, milk bottles will be strewn round, and 2,000 hooligans will be marching down the street.
Now, what I object to among these people when they begin to use koshes and bicycle chains and terrorize people, but if they want to dance their heads off in the street or elsewhere, well, why not let them have a bit of fun?
You've only got to look and listen to be quite sure that all these young people have got hemp. They're most definitely with it. This is a high-class joint. But everywhere, the cats have their own little places where they live the gospel that this is the age of the teenager. The gramophone industry cashes in on the well-off teenagers to some tune. 80% of the disc output is bought by the youngsters. That's 50 million records a year in Britain alone. And the objects of the mass hero worship, theirs is popularity with a capital P. To get a brief glimpse of them is practically heaven itself.
I remember a road show in the very beginning, 1957. It was the first live rock and roll show I saw at a theatre, De Montfort Hall, Leicester. It was called Oh Boy and packed to capacity with girls who screamed from the first introduction to the last chord. They screamed at lads on stage just like us, except they'd been washed. And talk about songs with a Mau Mau backing, some of the Oh Boy tunes were just normal tunes in tight trousers. But the electricity was there. We knew what it was designed to do, have girls wetting their knickers, and it did.
Oh, white sport coat and a pink carnation.
It could be Rab Butler singing that, or even Richard Hoggart. The attraction was that it was one of us performing.
I'm all alone in romance.
And the lads had a soft spot for Terry Dean. Unlike the Faiths and Wilds and Steels, Dean was a crooner, but quite a buffoon, one of the lads, and he did some Nana things. Caught without a ticket at Preston Railway Station, he said he forgot where he was going.
White sport coat and a pink carnation. I'm in a blue moon.
Caught naked in London, walking on Wigmore Street in his carpet slippers and underpants. Everybody wore underpants in those days. He gave his agent, Jaime Zahl, a very nasty turn by getting married to Edna Savage. Anyway, enough of Terry Dean. The point is, he wasn't Doris Day. He was a teenager. And like David Bowie and Rod Stewart, Mark Bolan, Pete Townsend, and even Screaming Lord Sutch for their generation, it might not all be pure rock and roll. But he was kicking over the traces in his private life. By this time, 1959, I'd moved on to university, where students were jazz-orientated and very jolly. I hated it and left to run a coffee bar youth club with two bands. One was a Cliff Richard-type singer who came from a good home and practiced smouldering to a non-existent camera and learnt to read music. I think his father was an insurance salesman. He bought very tight trousers, and we went on tour to working men's clubs. A talented lad he was, clean, and they hated him. Sissy, they'd cry. The other band couldn't sing in tune. Three rough lads who barked and hawked into the microphone, hawking buffoons. But among our own set, they were favourites. Went down a treat. The Yahoo ball on stage, the venom in the voice, charged the Yahoo electricity in the kids. And the circuit was made and the sparks flew. Our coffee bar at 3 o'clock in the morning. Blood on the floor, the end of a fast night. And the jukebox always has had one rip-it-up song. After the 1950s, rock and roll carried on. And the media made up fashions that didn't exist on the street. The Beatles sang in their astrakhan rounded collars, and good for them. But well, I looked down on a cleaned-up scene. Teddy boys were part of a greasy past.
The modernist boys are smarter, but they're getting so smart and worrying about what they look like so much, they're getting as conceited as what the girls are. I find of all the boys I know, the modernist boys, they're always worrying what they look like, always looking into mirrors and patting their hair down and putting it into place. They're much more conceited than girls.
Peacockery was back. Could this new lot be gobbers too?
Are you a mod or a rocker?
Well, I'm a... what they call a mod rocker. I improvise between a rocker and a mod.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, when you're a rocker, you dress in a civil suit and you'd be different to the women. But when you're a mod, you dress in casual. You'd be casual all the time. You dress kind of rough to what you do when you're a rocker, and You have a better time. I reckon when you're a rocker, a mod, you have a better time than when you are a rocker.
All of a sudden, I was reading again of a feeling I'd experienced among the new, striped-blazered, short-haired generation. Spitting at people had burst upon the world again. How comforting. It seemed, well, only the hemlines had changed.
It was several hundred young people, rather at a loose end, over the weekend. They came into the town, and finding not much else to do, they committed several acts of wanton and purposeless damage.
They seek him here, they seek him there. His clothes are loud, but never square. It will make or break him, so he's got to buy the best. 'Cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion.
What fun do the nods get out of smashing things up?
We get a kick out of it, you know. Something to do. There's nothing much else to do on a Sunday.
What do you smash up?
Well, anything. What comes in our way, mainly.
Why do the mods find such great delight in smashing things up?
Oh, it's great fun, isn't it?
What's funny about it?
Oh, I think it's hilarious.
What sort of things do you look for to smash?
People.
People?
Yeah.
We don't smash things up. We have a bit of fun.
Oh, what does having a bit of fun consist of?
Smashing things up.
And when he pulls his frilly nylon and his raked up tight, he feels a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
There's one thing that he loves, and that is flattery.
How did these fights actually start? I mean, if you're in the middle of one.
Ah, well, say, like me and my friends went to a dance hall once. And there's a load of rockers there. We started dancing, started taking the mick out of us. We can't just stand there and let a load of kids take the mick out of you, can you?
So what are you doing?
Well, you're going to have a punch up about it.
They go, poo mods. So you just say, what's the matter? So they say, poo mods. So they put the turn their nose up about it, and then it starts like that.
Each one out, dedicated follower of fashion.
And the public reaction to the 1960s was as similar as the panel of any questions when first confronted with rock and rolling Teds.
I suggest that they should collect them all up and put them on a boat and send them out to Cyprus where our boys are and bring our boys back that's got common sense.
It did make life just a trifle frightening. You felt as if you'd like to get away out of it. In fact, I did say, I can't imagine I shall ever come to the seaside again if this goes on much longer.
Bring back the cat!
That was the middle of the 1960s, but I'm not going to go on year by year. My theory is that every serious rock and roll fashion, everything that's happened since has been a repeat. The mods and the rockers, the skinheads and the suede heads, and the punk all echo the Teddy Boy. All are repeats of the Teddy Boy roar. This anarchic ball that's run through every British generation since 1956 like the lettering in a stick of Brighton rock. When I heard the most pungent commentator on the sticky business today, Julie Birchall, describe her coming to London as a teenage girl in 1976, it was just like listening to myself talk of what moved me in the grammar school 20 years before. The records that got her generation to its feet, the words are different, much more political, but the sound, the actual rock and roll in the Sex Pistols has the same rasp and roar of the bottom drawer again. Music to have your marbles scrambled to.
The Sex Pistols made you feel all down at once, storm the Bastille, and they were not wanting to be upwardly mobile and to get the bungalow. They wanted to stay working class, but do more of it, you know, just lie about all day, drink. And that was what gave them such verve. They weren't climbing towards anything, they were just saying how things were. And they weren't accommodating the music for anybody, doing it for themselves. And it came out as a big roar of working class discontent. I know that sounds terrible, like some belch Stan Ogden would do, but that's how it came out. A big roar of discontent, it was great.
And after 1976, the bands became much more honest to the roar that supported them, with names like Dead End Kids, The Clash, Boomtown Rats, No Buffoons. And what's going to happen next? Who can tell? It may all go away. Fat chance. One part in this history I haven't even mentioned because I don't know what to do without some tar and feathers is this bunch.
It's a very social kind of phenomenon, and it seems to be devoted to joy and kicks and interconnections between people and, you know, search for the big orgasm and narcotics and colors and psychedelic slides and, you know, a general kind of questing after sensation in the best sense. Sensation is a kind of a means of educating oneself to what life is all about.
Hippies. And there's no way you can include that lot with the punks and the skins and the mods and the teds. Not as a roar of working class discontent. Turn on, tune in and drop out, or turn in and drop off. Put pollen in your hooter and drift with me to Cleethorpes in 1967.
Why do you go around like this with your hair down to your shoulders and various, I think were quite the messages are written on your trousers?
Well, I just like it, you know. I don't like any fuss, anything like that. I just let myself go a bit, you know. I might, you know, get scruffy and that, but I'm not hurting anybody, am I?
But isn't it true that people turn around and look at you when you dress like this?
Well, if they look at me, I'm not bothered. I get used to it.
People are calling you dirty, smelly, a load of hippies. How do you react to that?
We don't go around wrecking in places and stuff like that, you know. We just sleep on beach. A bit of fun at night.
You're happier like this?
Yeah.
Could you be accused, do you think, of corrupting the local girls?
Corrupting local girls? I know some that...
Corrupt us.
What a long, long way from peace and love Cleethorpes seems to be the battles of Clacton. Though when people have asked me to do this little sociological hoggart on how did the Teds develop into mods and mods the skins, it isn't like that. The very nature of the beast, the Yahoo nature, clobbers people. It tires them out. Quite the opposite of scouting for boys. Rock and roll is life beyond reason. No training for adulthood, quite the opposite. It's sowing your wild oats and then leave it all for the quiet life.
But is there any age at which you think you'll stop fighting and chasing around?
Yeah, when I get married, I suppose. Settle down, then I'll stop the old, stop being a mug, stop being everything. Just live a clean life, as they say.
But do you think it'll be difficult to live this clean life, as you describe it?
Yeah, no, it shouldn't be difficult once you get married, I don't think, because you've got no time to do nothing.
And what's true for the kids is true of the idols. Even the outrageous Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols. After Sid Vicious died, Johnny changed his name and began a new career. From the very beginning, rock performers have been pulling up their roots and putting on a civvy suit over their Yahoo fur. It happened with Lord Tommy Steele in the very beginning.
Gradually we started saying, you know, well, we can't keep up with it anymore. I played Brussels one night and I walked on the stage with 36 police with big white steel helmets on, and they literally battered them off the stage with truncheons, which is really the truth, you know. After having this for about 4 years, it was then I said, right, I've had enough. Now I want to try and be an entertainer, if I can. You know, I want to try and appeal to a wide audience rather than just, say, between 14 and 19, you see.
Now that you've developed from the rock and roll idol to the more mature entertainer, do you feel any happier, any more secure?
Yes.
It was a big betrayal to us Teds when we heard Tommy Steele wanted to play pantomime. Rock with the caveman to Puss in Boots in a season. Shocking. And he made a film, The Duke Wore Jeans, Revolt into Style. He'd built himself a lovely career, deserting us, the gobbing hordes. I'm not blaming the lad, but that's how it was seen at the time. I mean, imagine, what career could Ronald Reagan have had if when he was a Hollywood cowboy, he'd gone round the towns in the sticks saying how he wanted to play Shakespeare at the Old Vic and sod you, Middle America. You see, the stars are not remote images of upward mobility and glamour. They're us at our rawest and best. When the Sex Pistols had their famous punch-up on Thames Television Live at 6 and told the old interviewer to F off, well, every wild old thing like me smiled good on the lads. Buffoons that they were, though I wouldn't want to get near one of them. They'd bite. And I remembered Adam Faith being done 20 years before, interviewed by John Freeman on the telly face-to-face. Rocking Adam, polite as a choir boy, not our standard bearer.
The newspaper cuttings say that you like classical music. Now, is that just a story or is it true?
But I do enjoy classical music.
What particular composer?
Sibelius and Dvorak I enjoy very much. Mm-hmm. Tchaikovsky I like.
Is this a fairly new interest or have you liked that all your life?
No, well, I've liked it for the past 5 years. My brother introduced me to classical music.
Do you ever have time to go to a classical concert?
The last one I went to see, the Royal Festival Hall, Toscanini.
Ah, yeah. Do you read a lot?
Fair amount, yeah, as much as I can. I like Catcher in the Rye, Salinger, and I'm going to start on Hemingway and Steinbeck now.
Billed as a big thing, that was. Marvellous reviews. The paper said, isn't he nice? But cop out, cop out, cop out, we thought. You see, the letters on the stick of Brighton Rock through every stylistic twitch of the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s is electricity, electric violence. A yell from the bottom drawer. Saturday night's a good night for fighting, and no matter how much star performers talk posh, no matter how much TV and radio jollies it along with Doris Day jingles, rock and roll is a beast. Dedicated follower of fashion doesn't mean Kings Road, Chelsea, but a razor blade at the end of the winkle picker and picking someone's skin out of the links in a bike chain. This thing lives without Top of the Pops publicity because it's jungle fresh for each generation. Young Jeremy Thorpe was quite right. It's the Mau Mau, the sod-off cry, and the grassroots keep it going. I was in Cumbria in 1978 in Maryport, at a youth club where they had a disco. Harmless, top-of-the-pops music. Then about 9:30, a great greasy circle of young men formed, and the music changed to blasted heavy metal. Judas Priest. And the youths in the circle kept their feet absolutely still while they started to shake their heads. Faster and faster and faster. Shaking, shaking, shaking just their heads like the fuses had blown. This was a local Cumbrian tribe of teenagers called Black Dogs and Baby Dogs. Kind of rough cross between Hell's Angel and a rocker. 100 of them, and the music so loud you couldn't hear the words, but they knew the words, tattooed into their hearts. We're gonna ride ya, we're gonna get right inside ya, and if you wanna keep going, just shout out the bell. There's always a few real rock records among the pap to keep the pure gospel alive. As The Who did for the mods in the 60s, Two-Tone in Coventry in the late 70s, as Judas Priest did for the Baby Dogs in Maryport, as Rotten and Vicious for the 100 or so in London who began the punk movement. And with every wave, a whole industry waits ready to bottle it, electricity to candy floss. Put it in pretty pantaloons and make that buffoon croon. The 6-5 special steaming down the line. 6-5 special right on time. Coal in the boiler, burning up bright. Rolling and a rocking through the night. That was the first on the telly. Rock and roll made safe. No sex, no drugs. Thank your lucky stars. Hear the whistle blowing, 12 to the bar, wow, wow. And what about the Beatles? Four ready teddies snarling in leather jackets on the Hamburg waterfront? Bring them home, Mrs. Epstein, and give them a wash and brush up. Put them in the circus. And it did happen in 1963, topping the bill on children's television in the Lenny the Lion show. Roll over, Frank Zappa, and tell Lord John Reith the news.
And as if you didn't know, tomorrow at 7 a.m., the great new Swinging Radio 1 takes the air.
Yes, stand by for this new revelation in British radio. A new BBC channel on 247 meters called Radio 1, bringing you music all day.
Music at morning time, music at night time, and music whenever you feel it's the right time to switch on and groove to the sounds that will let you know that you are happy that you own a radio and you can tune to the station that gives you a plentiful portion of powerful pop and is ready to serve you the music non-stop.
And just to make sure you've got the point...
Radio 1 is wonderful.
wonderful.
Auntie had unbuttoned her blouse and gave a whole wavelength of suck to rock of a kind.
The voice of Radio 1. Just for fun.
Music.
Too much.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1.
I don't think they understood. Rock and roll is a beast. Well-intentioned people thought you could pick it up and cuddle it. They forgot it had claws. Maybe they didn't know what teddy boy talk is. Let's rip it up and eye in the gutter. Razor fight talk is not family entertainment.
Yes, indeed, we've even got Arnold back. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first of the Tony Blackburn shows. I shall be waking up every morning, except Sunday, between 7 and 8.30. So let's away!
And what with Auntie having rock up the frock, the church, well known for exercising Yahoo spirits, had had the beast of rock doctored.
When the new general of the Salvation Army recently suggested that his instrumentalist should get with it, we awaited an inevitable combination, and now it's here, the Salvation Army and the Mersey Sound. Well, the young man and the young girl here in the studio from the Army are really with it, with electric guitars and amplifiers.
In the sea of God's forgetfulness, that's good enough for me. Praise God, my sins are gone, gone, gone. Jesus Christ, who are you, what have you sacrificed?
And yet bigger and bigger, wider still and wider. Next time you pass a record shop window in 1982, look at the name of the bands. The Slits, The Damned, The Clash, Bad Manners, Vibrators, Meatloaf, Stranglers. The March of the Mods in 1964 was no 20th century version of the Durham Miners' Gala. It was Sawdust Caesar's Putting the Boot In. What was Johnny Rotten famous for? Cutting his piles on stage with a razor blade? Good golly, Miss Molly, this is what you smother with candy floss. However it's emerged, as punk or black dog, skinhead or buskew gobbing Ted, nasty as a boil, every one of them. I know because I was one of them. Behind every sweet doo-wopper-bee-bop is an unfettered sexuality and sympathy for the devil. A violently anarchic fart in the face of all harmony, peace and progress. People could see that when it first happened, and it hasn't changed. Anybody with a penneth of grey matter could see it was trouble.
The rhythm, check the rhythm.
There's a man walking the streets of London late at night.
The rhythm, check the rhythm.
With a little black bag that's oh so tight.
The rhythm.
But when you think what we could have had.
Going courting, going courting, oh, with that your senses in a whirl. Going courting, going courting, dude enough to go and see a girl. Oh, it's fun to hunt and shoot a gun, or to catch a rabbit on the run. But you'll find it's twice as sporting, going courting.
The backing's good, but the voice is crummy. I'll give them five.
The preacher in that sermon on the evils of rock and roll was Ray Gosling. Crooning Buffoons was produced by Alistair Wilson.